Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on? This is your host here, James Bell, live on the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRM Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. We are here Sunday, July 31st, last day of the seventh month, and we are basically getting into the later stages of the year in the sport of boxing, and we'll be discussing this a little bit. Had a pretty eventful couple of days in the sport of boxing with two major events, and we'll be going over those here soon. So we'll be getting into that and in a little bit. But first, we have a couple of commercials to run through, and we'll get back into it. This is the video show here live on the MRM Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch other callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRM Broadcasting Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
But it's 1-2, you'll be able to talk and live on the show. Like I said, the show, we pretty much had a very busy week for the boxing. Basically, in the Showtime telecast, as Leo Santa Cruz, against, and we also had Mike Garcia return to the ring after a two and a half year layoff. Well, actually, it's 1.5 years. His last fight was January of 2014. When he had the WBO Super Featherweight Championships and decision win over Juan Carlos Burgos. And then after that, had a good amount of promotional issues and pretty much had a holdout. So he pretty much had the Andre Ward recently. So he came back to the ring last night at the Barclays Center and faced Io Rojas, who was there at 24 wins and 2 losses. Basically had his recent loss there against Johnny Gonzalez, pretty experienced guy there at featherweight. For the WBC Featherweight Championship, but that was back in 2012. And he pretty much almost also had a long layoff himself, actually, 2 layoffs as I check here on BoxRec, as after he fought Johnny Gonzalez and lost the unanimous decision for the WBC Featherweight, didn't fight for over 2 years, and then scored a unanimous decision win there. And then in this fight, he was back after about 2 years himself. So both of these guys were coming off long layoffs to face each other in the ring. And Mikey Garcia there was 34-0 coming in there. I think he came in there at 140 pounds, super lightweight. It was kind of, he was known to be below that weight, but for this, after this long layoff, he kind of gained a lot of weight. So he pretty much, came in there at the super lightweight division, 140-pound limit. He was, pretty much under that 140-pound limit when he came to the weigh-in here against Xavier Rojas. And, he was basically, trying to get his bearings back, Elio Rojas. Well, he does have a record of 24-2. Didn't necessarily beat that many people of note. He did win the WBC Featherweight Championship a good number of years ago, about 7 years ago or so. And defended it once after that. And like I said, I lost the featherweight championship to Johnny Gonzalez. But This was basically a fight for Mike Garcia to get his bearings back, and he pretty much did that. Was able to handle business there in the ring against Rojas and score the KO victory, TKO victory against Ilia Rojas. He, you know, was pretty much doing what he needed to do there. He pretty much had like a little bit of rust, but Garcia basically picked it up around, you know, rounds two and three. You know, in round three, he was able to put Rojas on the mat twice, and the that basically, you know, changed the, well, they changed the momentum, but I would say, you know, had the fight tremendously in Mikey Garcia's favor. So after handled there, and in the fifth round was able to, you know, drop Ilia Rojas, you know, once again, and Rojas got back up, you know, after the first knockdown in the fifth round. After the second knockdown in the fifth round, was pretty much a serious thing there, and Rojas was kind of hurt. He did get up after the second knockdown, but, I mean, that was four knockdowns in the fight already. After five rounds, the referee just, you know, stepped in and stopped the fight, giving the TKO victory to Mikey Garcia there. So he returns with a win there and moves to 35-0, with this being his 29th knockout. And I think that, you know, puts him in the, you know, back in the thick of things. We'll see if he's going to be able to, you know, stay busy, maybe get another fight. It would be great if he is able to get two fights before the end of the year. I doubt it, but he might, you know, be able to get one more fight in. I'm not necessarily certain that it will be at 140-pound limit. He pretty much said after the fight that he wants to be at the 135-pound division there, lightweight, instead of super lightweight, and see if he's going to be able to do some things there at super lightweight. Not super lightweight, but at lightweight, because super lightweight, he was trying to see if he could cut down to 135 pounds, but after the 2.5-year layoff, he, you know, just wanted to put it there at 140 pounds with this return fight. So we have Mikey Garcia back. His intentions are to, you know, 135 pounds. Pounds. I don't know if they're going to somebody that's, you know, very known, but they have a good number of notable guys that are floating around there at 135 pounds, such as Jorge Linares, WBC champ, Rancis Barthelemy, Anthony Grolla, Robert Easter Jr. is another one. Junior is one, and it's Verdejo. I'm not really certain that fight with Verdejo there in the car. I feel like Garcia will probably at 135 pounds. I don't think it will be like a main event on a card on a PBC. You know, this was basically this event was basically handled by Al Heyman, but not necessarily a PBC fight. Those are network telecasts. This is like Showtime Sports Boxing. So, you'll probably see him maybe be a co-feature to another event that will be on Premier Boxing Champions. So, we're pretty much going to be on the lookout for that with Mikey Garcia. I've heard that, you know, they probably would try to get Mikey Garcia there against Terrence Crawford, but, you know, two things. You still have the promotional issues there. I don't feel that they completely worked it out. While, you know, they may think it may have had a settlement between Al Heyman and Bob Arum, it's still another thing to see if they're going to be able to work together to put some cards in place before things open up a little bit more in reference to the sport of boxing with fighters actually fighting each other. That'll be something to look out for here with the Black Division, whichever. Once again, if you're listening to Talk Radio Broadcasting Channel, you could call in to Talk Boxing at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on. And we get on the show all right now. Next move is getting to the event of yesterday. NBA World Featherweight title, basically the super title, against Carl Frampton. You had Nick Cruz in there as the WBA Super World Champion, the Super Featherweight Champion, but Super World Featherweight Champion. As we know, the WBA has the Super and the Regular along with the interim, and he defended it against Carl Frampton, who came in there 22-0, coming up from super bantamweight as he unified the BA and the IBF super bantamweight championships against Scott Quigg in February at the Manchester Arena. And this fight was probably one of the more exciting fights that boxing fans have seen this year. It was, you know, I would fourth type of fight, but, you know, not anything where they were like slugging it out from round to round nonstop, you know, like the fight they had. I think it was like a few months back where we had Orlando Salido basically going up against, I think it was Salido and Vargas there, Francisco Vargas, where that one was just back and forth, inside fighting, nonstop inside fighting for a good number of rounds. Here with Leo Santa Cruz and Frampton, there was, you know, it was kind of like a tactical battle between those two. Santa Cruz was, you know, trying to, you know, kind of use his distance as he, I think it was like a 10 centimeter, or it was like a 7-inch reach advantage coming into the fight that Leo Santa Cruz had against Carl Frampton. But for the first few rounds, pretty much like the first 6 rounds or so, Carl Frampton seemed to have either knows how they reached the advantage or didn't see anything like put them off this game there for those first few rounds. Like to be the first to the punch and seemed to have, of course, he had the more telling punches, but he seemed to have more power coming out of his punches when he was punching Leo Santa Cruz in comparison to when Santa Cruz was throwing his punches at Frampton. And with that, he was able to get the momentum from the first four rounds or so in that fight. Of course, he had a lot of support of fans there at the Barclays Arena with a lot of Irish fans there to support Carl Frampton. And I think those, like, first four rounds, he basically had the advantage. Was, you know, trying to score it, you know, while the fight was going on. And I think, you know, pretty much after those first six rounds, maybe, I think he had the, pretty much like a 4-2 advantage after those first six rounds. I think he had like 4-2 advantage there. And then, you know, in the second half of the fight, basically, you know, getting more work in, was trying to target the body of Carl Frampton and score there, and also, you know, score a little bit more, you know, over the top. But his body was much starting in the beginning of the, you know, the seventh round, and then came over to the eighth round, pretty much like set the stage for the rounds there. And, you know, by round 10 and especially through around 11, those body shots may have had, you know, some type of effect on Carl Frampton, because in round 11, Leo Santa Cruz was able to score multiple times. At least I was able to see at least three times he was able to score over the top. And, you know, he basically had that clear advantage there on round 11. But 12, it was, you know, pretty much, it seemed like, you know, everything was in the balance as to who was going to win the fight or not. And I think that, you know, both fighters tried to finish the fight strong in that 12th round. And, you know, after that 12th round, it pretty much went to the scorecards. And that one, like I said, we had a draw by Guido Cavallari. And Tom Schreck scored the bout 117-111. And Frank Lombardi scored about 116-112 for the winner and the new WBA Super World Featherweight Champion, Carl Frampton. He moves to 20-0. It was his first professional thing. This is a second fourth fight. But not sure about a 9-3. I would really have been satisfied with a 7-5, but there were like where it was close and you couldn't really tell who got the better of who in that round. One of them was round 9, and I think there was probably another early round, like I think it was like round where it was kind of like up in the balance as to who had the advantage in that round. But with Frampton basically getting that win, he, you know, becomes a two-division world champion there. And he has a couple of key wins there for the course of 16. All right, right now we have a call in area code 81. What's going on with you?
What up, though, fellas? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. Just checking in with you guys. I just caught the tail end of what James was saying. First of all, I need some consolation this week because my fighter lost. I'm not saying Santa Cruz was my favorite fighter, but he's definitely one of my favorite fighters because of his all-action style and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But my fighter lost, and I feel bad. So I'll leave it at that for right now.
All right. I think you were like the first caller in here today. Leo Santos, basically coming up until last year, he may have been like undefeated. But you know, there were some fans out there that kind of felt like he hasn't really been tested or so, and I think that didn't, you know, come into fruition for. Fans that Abner Mares fight that happened last year, and that was a fight between Santa Cruz and Mares, and Santa Cruz was able to get the better of that, especially in that second half of that fight. And so Santa Cruz was, you know, able to move on from that, defend the belt that he had there, and then he took like a kind of a semi easy. Martinez scoring a TKO victory in here, getting a fight against Paul Frampton, which was a, you know, one of the over the course of 2016, you know, having up there with you know, Solito Vargas, you know, have it up there with Thurman and Porter, and also have it in there up there with Trout and Charlo as you know, favorite that I've seen for this year. So what
hey James, just to let you know your audio is breaking up at this point. I'm not sure if that's something you can resolve. I moved to a location, I'm not sure. But once again, back to still kind of choppy there.
All right. Well, you got me?
Yeah, I believe I do. Yeah, gotcha.
All right, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, but once again,
yeah,
back
to
the fight.
Yeah, switch things up a little bit.
Yeah.
But it should be good now. All right.
Yeah. So back to the fight from last night. It's a fight I've been definitely looking forward to. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've had reservations about Frampton, and that's probably because there hasn't been a big boxing presence coming out of the U.K. or just that area here recently. I mean, I know we got Joshua. There's a couple other names that's out there. But as far as having a dominant fighter come from that area, from overseas like that, we haven't really seen since the likes of, like, Landis Lewis and stuff like that to a degree. So, and even into the lead up to this fight, I also read about some stuff where they questioned the quality of Cruz's opposition leading up to the Abner Mares fight, which he definitely proved his mettle in that fight. So, but once again, I'm shocked. I mean, I really expected for Cruz to get the win, but that didn't happen. I need to try to catch the fight this week so I can see it myself at this point. But aside from that, there's already talk of a rematch. But, of course, Frampton wants to take the rematch back overseas, and rightfully so, I would do the same thing too. But if that's a question of when that would happen. He said they want to fight in an outside stadium, and at this point now, going towards the winter months, that's not going to be likely. I mean, they still could fight indoors, but you know, but if they do a rematch, that will probably will likely be overseas. But aside from that, Frampton, I mean, he put himself on the world stage yet again, and at the same time, he commands a lot of opportunities in this division. I mean, keep in mind that he moved up in weight. So he has a lot of opportunities available to him. And shamefully, he already made a statement that he said that Rigondeaux has no value to him pretty much because there's no money in that fight. So unfortunately, we may not see that. But despite that, there's plenty of other opportunities available to him around that weight class. You know, so we'll see how that develops.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, was talking, Carl Frampton was talking about, you know,
ringing though a little bit, but he was more into people that were in that featherweight division, such as Gary Russell Jr., and most notably the IBF featherweight champion Lee Selby. With Lee Selby also being around that same area as Carl Frampton, a fight between him and Selby, over in the Manchester Arena or, somewhere else in England or something like that would, be a very, very fan-friendly fight in that area. As, they have a lot of, a lot of good turnouts for fights, for those fighters. And, if they have like a, like an area rivalry or local rivalry, or if there's something between like, England and, Ireland or something like that, the fans will show up in droves. And, I think the promoters there kind of see that. So from a money perspective, that will probably be the it will be the more lucrative fight, I would think. And, also be the bigger attraction there with Box Nation covering that if they can. If it was Carl Frampton versus Lee Selby. So a title unification fight between those two would probably be really big. If it was outdoors, then it wouldn't be, like you said, in the later course of this year. It would probably be, sometime later in the summer. But if they're able to get it indoors, they might be able to try to pull it off like in November or December if they could do it. I'd be in the lookout for that. That would probably be a good back and forth fight between those two. What would you think about the potential Lee Selby fight against Carl Frampton?
Yeah, and just one point. I was thinking about as you commented on that. It's like a lot of times we want to see fighters like we want to see a Frampton Ringendahl. We want to see other fights that just don't necessarily materialize. And really what we need to focus on too is that these boxers are putting their lives on the line. We know that every time they get into the square ring. But it's all about the money. It's all about maximizing the opportunity and maximizing the person. I think Santa Cruz got, $1 million last night for last night's fight. I'm not sure if that's a career high for him. But obviously, going forward, this next fight is going to be probably not going to be, definitely, this purse will not be as much. But, basically what I'm saying is that, these guys are looking for the best money and not necessarily the matchup that we want to see. But with that said, the idea of a Lee Selby Frampton fight would definitely be a huge fight over there. A huge fight. That's definitely would triple the income of a Frampton Ringendahl fight, as much as we want to see that. But in reality, it's about the money. It's about the money. It's about the purse. But it'd be a great fight.
Yeah, it'd be a very good fight between those two. That would be a, like you said, a moneymaker there for Frampton. I think Eddie Hearn would. I think Eddie Hearn is the promoter for Carl Frampton, and I think I feel that he'll probably get that put together and make that come to fruition instead of a fight against Guillermo Rigondeaux. Either that or like you said, a rematch against Leo Santa Cruz over in his. Over in his backyard. I don't think that, they'll make that fight against Santa Cruz in Los Angeles as, Santa Cruz kind of like felt that the crowd kind of like influenced the judges as to what was going on inside that ring. But I think that's probably the fight between Frampton and Selby is the more lucrative one.
You're probably right about that. Just another thing, point in particular, not for any one match. One thing I always said on the show is that I'm always waiting to see how things shape up so they can how things figure out as far as how the rest of the year shapes out. And we're seeing that literally before our eyes from this fight to the lightweight division is ready to get on fire yet again. And other fights that are happening now and planned in the near future to shape up how we forecast the rest of the year for from the middleweight division, light heavy, of course, and these lightweights too, you know, 140, 147, mm-hmm. 126. And I hope that Nicholas Waters can get back in there and figure into this division as well. You know, he needs to be in there despite the fact that he lost that last fight, which is a robbery, which we know.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and going into the light heavyweight division, you know, switching things here, switching gears here. On Friday, over in Quebec City, we had the WBC and lineal light heavyweight champion Adonis Stevenson defend those titles against Thomas Williams Jr. You know, we had, you know, Adonis Stevenson, like I said, the lineal heavyweight, lineal light heavyweight champion, excuse me. And Thomas Williams there was, you know, kind of a voluntary defense there for Stevenson. Thomas Williams was there ranked at number 8 in the WBC. He's kind of like outside of the top 10 in the particular weight class. Fight News actually has him ranked at number 12. But, you know, at least, you know, he's, you know, a guy there that's, you know, amongst the top 15 in the light heavyweight division that Donna Stevenson is fighting in. It was, you know, kind of a, you know, action-packed fight for, you know, the time that it was going. I mean, Adonis Stevenson was getting tagged a little bit there, you know, in those first few rounds by Thomas Williams Jr. But Stevenson was able to score a couple of knockdowns, especially like within the in the first round, near the end of the first round, as he was, Stevenson was able to score with the left hand that, you know, hit Williams and kind of like dropped him, and, you know, Williams was able to get up, you know, kind of, you know, kind of get up there, and he seemed like he acted like, you know, that was a mistake on his part, you know, that he shouldn't have got caught with that punch. But, you know, going into rounds 2 and 3 or so, he was able to, you know, it was able to be a good back and forth fight. I mean, it looked like Thomas Williams was game. But then in that fourth round, Thomas Williams was basically, he was going into the ropes there. And, you know, while he was throwing back at Stevenson, Stevenson was able to come out with that left hand once again. It was a little bit, you know, harder there. They caught him in the chin. And it, like, definitely floored Thomas Williams. I mean, it was almost to the level of that fight. Who was it? Martinez and Martinez-Williams, where the second fight of Martinez-Williams, where Martinez was able to floor Williams there and basically knock him out cold. And here with Thomas Williams, he almost got knocked out cold by the left hand of Adonis Stevenson. He was able to get up, but it wasn't enough for the referee to, you know, basically stop that fight. So Adonis Stevenson is able to retain the WBC and lineal light heavyweight championships, moving up to 28-1 with 23 knockouts to his record, you know, scoring that 23rd knockout. And like I said, he was, you know, he's still the lineal light heavyweight champion. You know, I'm not sure what else is there for Adonis Stevenson as. While, you know, some people may say he's waiting for that Sergey Kovalev-Andre Ward winner. If Andre Ward wins this fight, I don't think that there's going to be a fight put together between Andre Ward and Adonis Stevenson. So his best bet is that Sergey Kovalev win that fight against Andre Ward in November, so that, Heyman and who is it? Igas Klimas. I think it's Igas Klimas is the promoter for Adonis Stevenson and Kathy Duva for Sergey Kovalev for them to negotiate and, you know, make a fight for 2017 to unify the light heavyweight titles and be, you know, the undisputed, you know, unrivaled light heavyweight champion, having all the major belts out there. So Adonis Stevenson, this may be, if it's not his last fight of the year in 2016, he may go for the mandatory title defense against Eleider Alvarez, number one contender, or see if not, then there's like another voluntary defense that he could have. So, Terrell, what's your thoughts about Adonis Stevenson?
Well, too, let me ask you a question real quick. Say, for example, that Stevenson and Kovalev, they fought already, right? And Kovalev wins, whether it be by knockout, either or decision. And but even in that proposed fight, you expect that somebody's going down. I mean, because these are two legitimate power punchers that we already know about. So, say Stevenson takes a loss. How much does that how much would that have diminished him and his ability to get future fights going forward if he would have took a loss from Kovalev, despite whatever title loss it was?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. And I feel like, I mean, this fight should have happened, you know, back in 2014 between those two. It was basically an agreement by those two guys to fight whoever they fought in 2014 and then after that fight each other. You know, Stevenson was able to fight from far there back in 2014, and Sergey Kovalev defended his title against, I think it was Cedric Agnew, before they tried to get the negotiations put together. And then, you know, what happened was, you know, those two were pretty much in negotiations. They kind of like had the fight signed, but on Stevenson's end, it didn't seem, they were saying that the money wasn't right over on Stevenson's end there, you know, via HBO or, you know, whoever was offering it to him. And then, you know, Stevenson, like, just got on with the advisor, Al Heyman, and he was looking over the contract, and he's saying, like, this is not enough money for you. You need to, you know, reject this and see if you can get something with more money. And since he was unable to do that, he just, you know, went ahead, balked at the fight, turned it down because of the money, and then ended up going to Showtime. And that was the major reason that Sergey Kovalev was ended up fighting Bernard Hopkins at the end of 2014. It's because they couldn't get that fight together between Stevenson and Kovalev while both of them were under HBO. And so with, you know, Stevenson there at Showtime, you know, they just, you know, couldn't get it done. But if Kovalev was able to defeat Stevenson around that time, especially by knockout, I think that would have really crushed, you know, Adonis Stevenson's, you know, whole thing there. Because to me, with Stevenson is, what was he at? He's at 39 years old right now. Oh, no, 38 years old right now. So I'm not necessarily sure, like, how long he was going to be able to extend his career, even though he only has 29 professional fights to his record right now. I'm not sure if there's, like, you know, anything else much for him to try to get back into the light heavyweight race if he lost to Sergey Kovalev. Unless, you know, they had, like, some type of rematch put together, then I'm not sure he would probably be able to get back into the game. I think it would be like something to where it would make those promotional gaps even worse if he still signed without Heyman and went over to Showtime after losing to Sergey Kovalev.
Well, you know what? I think you're pretty much right about that. I'm not sure the money that was offered him for the Kovalev fight. But I mean, it couldn't have been. They couldn't have lowballed him that much because he's a champion at that point. So
yeah.
my thing about it is like, well, I tell you, this is what it looks like to me. Because Stevenson, nice home cushion, fighting up there in Canada, good support, making good money up there. Not great money, but making good money. And just fighting contender after contender. And we know he almost got in trouble with on the Fanfara fight. He almost took a loss in that one fight, unexpected. But he's just fighting name after name. He's probably coming away with something like $1.5 million per purse and making relatively easy money while taking a high level risk at this point. But it's like, once again, just sitting back in the cushion and not really taking that challenge for that big fight, that career defining fight.
Yeah.
But
I
tend to think that if he would have took the Kovalev fight and took a loss, would it be by decision loss or knockout loss, I still think he would have been relative. I mean, one loss doesn't kill you. I mean, hell, Santa Cruz just took his first loss. We know that's not going to kill him. And even despite the fact that Stevenson is 39, he still has a future, even if he would have took that loss, you know?
Yeah.
It's just once again sad to see that, well, like we said before, we know that these guys are in this for the money. We know that. But it's just disappointing once again when we see what could be a great fight happen and it doesn't happen for a variety of reasons. But like even with this fight this past weekend, it was a matchup of two labeled power punchers. But at the same time, you could see the class difference between the two fighters, between Stevenson and Williams, because even at first knockdown that Williams suffered, he got up, he took his time. Darner took the full count, looked at his corner, acknowledged him. I got it. I'm okay, which we know it was okay. Probably never fully recovered from that power he's taking in that first couple rounds and stuff like that. Then, of course, like I said, subsequently in the fourth round, he was giving it back to Seaton, and he sure was. Like I said, he's known as the power puncher. So, but but it's like
Go ahead.
Like I said, we want to see great fights, and it's like it's so hard to get a great fight these days. You know, briefly, somebody shared on social media the supposed best round in boxing history between Hagler and what's my man name from Detroit,
Cobra.
Yeah, I watched that first round again, and it was just action packed, as you already know. And it's like that was a great fight between two all-timers right there, Hall of Famers. And it's like these days. It's so hard to get a fight on that magnitude, you know, from Canelo not fighting Triple G to other fights not happening, you know, that we see. And it's disappointing, man.
But that's why, you know, we kind of like enjoy some of these other fights more. I mean, like we mentioned, with Vargas and Salido, with Thurman and Porter, and you know, now with the one that was yesterday there with Leo Santa Cruz and Frampton, because when we know that, you know, that you have either, you know, two very good fighters or two fighters that are, you know, ranked among the tops of their division, you're going to see if you're able to see, you know, a very good to great fight. You know, there's only a couple of you know, exceptions there, but I remember, like, you know, something mentioned, you know, way back with one of, you know, our former regulars out here, Greg, you know, when they say that they, you know, sometimes when they promote like a very big fight or something like that, it doesn't always come to fruition that it ends up as a great fight. You almost have to, you know, see if you could find some that fall through the cracks or something like that, like the Mickey Ward, Arturo Gatti trilogies, or the Vasquez Marquez series.
Wow,
you know,
yeah,
those type of fights. You know,
yeah, and when have we had one of those in recent memory? Wow.
Yeah. So you gotta, like, you know, kind of see if it's you know, some kind of fight that's around those type of fighters that kind of like bring it. But when it's like somebody that's highly ranked, like, you know, Santa Cruz and Frampton are, as Frampton was, you know, amongst the best of his division, moving up to fight Leo Santa Cruz, who was, you know, amongst the tops of his division. And, you know, that came out to be a very good fight there between those two. But, you know, otherwise we haven't really been seeing that. So, I mean, it looks like we may be kind of like getting into that a little bit more here with these type of matchups, but it'll be a wait and see approach if that actually comes to fruition there. Once again, we got less than 10 minutes left on the live portion of the show. You want to get into talk boxing here until we're going to see if we can get into overtime a little bit until about 8:45, 9 o'clock Eastern time. You can call in now at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press 1 to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. All right. We have, like, I think I'm going to try to get into the schedule here a little bit. We got, you know, a few things coming up here pretty soon. Here we are at the end of July. We had the last Saturday in July with, you know, Leo Santa Cruz Frampton being the feature fight. And now we're stepping into the 8th month of the year with August. And August 6th, we have Andre Ward coming in there in Oakland, California, pretty much his hometown, in another light heavyweight fight against Alexander Bram. Alexander Bram has pretty much had most of his fights there at super middleweight, but will be moving up to fight Andre Ward in the light heavyweight division. And so we'll see Andre Ward in action here in this total fight that's going to be before the clash between him and Sergey Kovalev. So, let's see. Do you have, like, anything to say about Andre Ward and if he needs to, you know, do something specific in this fight here against Alexander Brand to have the most momentum going up against Sergey Kovalev?
Well, I mean, the main thing is I want to see everything that has brought Andre Ward to this point, and I want to see him looking very sharp. I want to bring in a very sharp performance as far as his command of the fight, and basically all the things that we know he does well, do those things, execute those things, and look exactly like purported pound-for-pound best, right? And we know, like, from Kovalev's last fight, there was a slight narrative that he didn't look his best at all. And was that just to try to throw a perception out there that Kovalev is possibly slower, that Kovalev is possibly made to order for Ward? But, you know, for Ward, don't even worry about that. Like he already said, I'm not worried about that. I'm going to do what I need to do, you know. So for this fight, I just want him to look exceptionally sharp, take command of the fight. The guy's going to be ultra-aggressive, we know that. And on top of that, there's the added pressure coming in of looking good for this fight and winning in this fight. I'm not saying it in a dominant fashion, but really, really, I want this to be a dominant win. I don't care if it goes 12 rounds. I want it to be a dominant win. Because he needs to be able to take that momentum into this next fight for the Kovalev fight. I mean, because we already know that for Ward, he's had these long stretches of inactivity from injury to other issues as well. But at this point, I think this is the second fight this year, I believe. But despite that, he needs to look dominant. He needs to be very sharp. And despite whatever narrative out there for Cole have been made to order, don't worry about that. Worry about yourself. Worry about what's in front of you. So those things I want to see him do, just look very sharp. And it's like a pound-for-pound. When you think of someone being at the top of the pound-for-pound list, you're thinking of a dominant fighter. And, I mean, I know there's different types of fighters. There's power punchers. There's pure boxers. There's people that can do both. But I want to see a dominant fighter. That's really what I want to see.
Yeah, gotcha. I mean, I pretty much feel the same way. I think he needs to have a very impressive performance, you know, either, you know, kind of like, I wouldn't necessarily say, like, he needs to score a knockout victory here, but at least, you know, kind of get a, you know, a clear decision of victory where he's able to showcase most of his or all of his skills there and, you know, see if he could, you know, have another type of defensive performance as well. So I think in his case, going up against Alexander Brand, I think he needs to, you know, execute what he needs to execute there against a guy that's coming up from the super middleweight. I mean, when you have somebody that's, you know, among the best there, pound for pound, going up against a guy that, you know, not very many people know had his most of his fights there at super middleweight and then coming up to a light heavyweight for this fight against Andre Ward. Andre Ward got to show up and basically show out against him. I mean, he's not the guy that'll, you know, come out there and see if he can score a first-round knockout or nothing like that. But he could, you know, see if he could have a clear, you know, basically show like clear dominance that he's a much better fighter, and that's what he needs to do here. In contrast, I mean, yeah, Sergey Kovalev struggled in his last fight, but he was going up against somebody that was, you know, higher ranked in the light heavyweight division. Andre Ward doesn't have that here against Alexander Brand. So they basically say, you know, Andre Ward, light heavyweight, going up to light heavyweight, was, of course, the best super middleweight out there when he was fighting. So, and Alexander Brand is what you would call amongst the best in the super middleweight division. So, he's got to be able to handle his business here.
Yeah, and just kind of what I said about the lead-up to the Sean Porter Thurman fight. Hope this fight takes place, and once again, hope there's no injury. Please, please, this is another fight that we, I would say, desperately want, need, and want for this year to make into what could be a great year. And great. I kind of use that the term "great" is kind of used differently now, so that's we don't necessarily see these top fights no more. But with a fight between Kovalev and Ward, Hopkins, Porter, even to a degree, Santa Cruz, Frampton, because of how that fight and what happened in that fight. And I'm not going to necessarily throw Khan Canelo in there as making this fight this year great. But it could be for now, these days, it could be a great, solid year. Like I said, just hope Ward doesn't get hurt and there are no setbacks at all in this fight to go forward in November, whenever it's supposed to happen. So we definitely need this fight to happen.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. If we're able to get this thing here with, you know, Kovalev and Ward, it'll pretty much, you know, put a cap to, I would say, fairly eventful 2016 so far. That, you know, was kind of, you know, still waiting for a couple of other events out there to happen. We still have Tyson Fury in the rematch against Vladimir Klitschko for those titles. And we have had, you know, Deontay Wilder defend his championship against Alexander Povetkin, but that wasn't able to happen. But, you know, even with those takeaways, we still have had a very eventful 2016 so far. Also, you know, like you mennedthe thing with Gennady Golovkin not being able to fight Canelo Alvarez. But, I mean, we're still getting, like I said, a very active year in the sport there. All right, it seems like we have just jumped into the overtime portion of the show here. And with that, I will see if I can get into some news that's floating around here within the sport of boxing. Just seeing here, one of them is coming from the site Boxing News Results, as it seems like a potential fight, which would be a welterweight unification, is being put in the works as they're trying to get Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman to see if they'll be able to fight each other in the year 2017. Either it'll be early 2017 or mid 2017. They said it'll be around early 2017 as a title unification match. Danny Garcia is there as the WBC champion, and Keith Thurman is the WBA super champion there. And the thing is, they're trying to see if they can get that fight put together in early 2017, but with 2016 still on the horizon, I think that, Keith Thurman will try to get a, one more fight in for 2016, maybe against his mandatory, try to get his mandatory out of the way real quick. And David Avnijian, that's what his name is, David Avnijian. And with Danny Garcia, they've been, negotiating to have a fight between Danny Garcia and the highest-ranked contender in the WBC rankings, which is Andre Berto. And they're trying to put that at September 23rd at the Barclays Center. And, of course, me and Torella talk about that on boxing message boards on Facebook as a potential matchup there. September 23rd between Danny Garcia and Andre Berto at the Barclays Center. Also, as a co-feature, they will have Julian J-Rock Williams going up against Jermall Charlo for Charlo's super welterweight title. So we're still looking to see if that September 23rd card is official, and if it is, then yeah, I'm taking a trip up there. I know that it may be a fairly eventful weekend in football for that particular weekend, but if this comes together, then I'm going up to New York to see that fight. So, what's your thoughts about the a potential title unification match between Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman?
Well, I tell you what, I definitely love the sound of that fight. We kind of talked about some supposed opponents for Thurman after he beat Sean Porter, and I know we talked about in briefly in regards to a potential Thurman or Danny Garcia fight.
Yes.
But first thing first, before we get to that point. Like I said, it will be logical. First off, Thurman should definitely fight one more time this year. If that's his mandatory, I'm totally fine with that. I'm totally fine with that because he's proved his worth from taking the Sean Porter fight and winning that fight, But for Danny Garcia, I mean, I hope he does fight Berto. I'm not saying Berto is a serious threat to him, but my one main point in this fight, Berto has been at 147 for a long time. I'll say he's been at 147 for a long time, and whereas Danny Garcia's only been in the division for what, three fights or something like that. I don't even know how many fights it's been exactly, but
It's been pretty much. I think it's been he fought Pauly Malignaggi and then he fought Robert Guerrero. So I think that's been two.
Yeah. So now we got a proposed matchup between him and Berto. A guy who, like I said, has been at welterweight for quite some time. So this is a legitimate welterweight. I mean, Guerrero is too, but he's a bit faded. We know that. Malignaggi, we know about him. Durable chin, but no true puncher power. So basically what I'm saying, has Garcia been tested at 147 yet? And I think the definitive answer for that is no. I think it's no. And I'm not saying Berto can pick him apart and just rough him up. I'm not saying that, but there should be concern from the Danny Garcia camp taking a Berto fight. I'm sure they have their confidence. I'm sure they may think that Berto is definitely not as prime anymore. But Berto still still has good lateral movement, still has real good speed, and certainly got good pop even at this stage. So I mean, as far as Thurman Garcia, of course I would love to see it, of course. And I think a lot of people have Thurman favored in that fight going into that fight. But I think Garcia got a little more work to prove at 147 against a legitimate contender. I'm not sure what Berto's ranking is, but he's a solid opponent at 147. So get past that first, and we'll see the rest.
Yeah, I mean his he's like I said, he's number two guy there in the WBC rankings, but they have I think it's Amir Khan that was ranked above him, and you know what happened with Amir Khan, one, and then two, it wasn't like, you know, they kind of would want to make that fight, that rematch against, you know, Garcia and Khan because of what Garcia was able to do in that fight at 140 pounds. So, I mean, this is what's left there for Danny Garcia. If he's, you know, able to, you know, get this fight against Andre Berto. And Berto will be able to see if he can step up. I mean, he, you know, did get a little bit of momentum back there by, you know, defeating Victor Ortiz in the rematch that they had. And he was able to keep his number two contendership intact by doing that. So kind of seeing that they're, you know, able to put that together and also add in that co-feature there between Charlo and J-Rock instead of, you know, having J-Rock and Charlo fight on October 1st over in the site in Los Angeles, which was, you know, the initial thought of what would happen there, as October 1st is a deadline for them to put, you know, that together for Charlo. So if we're able to get those two fights there at the Barclays Center, that would be a very good card to, you know, already fairly good year for 2016 there. Just seeing if there's, like, anything else here that, you know, we can delve into. Let me check.
Well, just one small note, too.
Okay.
You got me laughing once again. Mikey Garcia was able to secure a win this weekend. I think he came in fight at 138, something like that. He said they want to campaign going forward at lightweight or something like that. So be basically between 130 and 135.
Right.
So I'm glad to see him get this win, get his name back, not necessarily back in the ring at this point. But somebody on social media this weekend said that I didn't realize, but Crawford and Garcia fought in the amateurs. I want to actually verify that. And from the accounting was that Crawford definitely got the better of him in the amateur fight. That matters to a degree. But even at this point now, being that Crawford is at the top of his game right now, considering his accomplishment at this point, I don't see any way on how a Crawford-Garcia could fight. Because Garcia's been out of the game for so long. I mean, he would literally have to fight twice this year, and then come into next year, try to fight for a title, and move up in weight in order to try to get a Crawford opportunity. Stopping it, I'm not even going to think about that because Crawford got so many more possibilities ahead of him at 140. But for me, as you already know, I'm a big fan of Garcia, Mikey Garcia. I really hope he can get some good opportunities, and I think that he will. So I'm glad to see him back in the ring.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I was talking about, you know, that fight in the first couple of segments here on the show, and, you know, get right back into it. Yeah, Mikey Garcia was able to, you know, get back in the game against Edio Rojas and, you know, score that TKO victory. And like you said, he was at around like 138 pounds, so that was a super lightweight division or a super lightweight type of fight. But he'll probably campaign at, you know, 135 pounds, and there's, like, you know, a few good names there at the 135 pound division. I was mentioning Jorge Linares, Rancis Barthelemy, depending on if he's going to, you know, still be around there at 135 or if he's going to go up to 140 pounds. You do have Mickey Bay still there. Uriokas Gamboa may still be floating around there at lightweight. And also you have the young fighter there, Felix Verdejo. Verdejo's still there at with top rank. So I'm not sure if, you know, that type of fight would be put together later on. But if not, then there also is Robert Easter Jr. there at 135 pounds for him. So there's a good amount of matchups that could be put together real soon there for Mikey Garcia that would, you know, come off with fairly good dividends for him there at 135. With 140, you're talking about the potential fight between Garcia and Crawford. And I think Crawford is pretty much at, you know, his highest point right now. You know, after scoring that landslide victory over Victor Postol. And while he may, you know, stay there at 140 for, you know, a good little bit, maybe until maybe through next year, I think an inevitable move to 147 pounds is on the horizon for Terrence Crawford. So I think that, you know, a fight between Garcia and Crawford is, like, you know, way further down, if that is going to actually happen, like you said. Mikey Garcia has to get back into the thick of things a little bit more if he's going to stay at that weight class and fight a few more fights around that weight class in order to be properly prepared for a big event there against Terrence Crawford. Yeah, speaking of Terrence Crawford, we pretty much got, you know, another, like, news tidbit coming from our favorite trainer, Freddie Roach. Freddie Roach was saying after the fight between Crawford and Victor Postol, with Postol being a guy that Freddie Roach was training, he says that another guy that, you know, he trains, that we all know, Manny Pacquiao, he says it probably wouldn't be a good idea for Manny Pacquiao to face Terrence Crawford at this point, or especially in his fight that's scheduled for November 9th there. So I think that fight is, you know, out of the cards, as I kind of, like, knew that would be out of the cards anyway, because if there was any time that Manny Pacquiao could have fought Terrence Crawford, it would have been February when Pacquiao fought Timothy Bradley for the third time. That was pretty much that time frame where he should have been able to fight Terrence Crawford. So what I feel is going to happen is for Manny Pacquiao to go up against Jesse Vargas for that WBO version of the welterweight championship, as, you know, Bob Arum kind of likes those WBO championships a little bit. So, hey, Terrell, what you got on that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because actually in the lead-up to the Crawford-Postol fight, I read an article where it said that this could be an eliminator for the winner to fight Pacquiao. And like you just said, Pacquiao had the opportunity to fight Crawford back in February. And just going and back in that, I forgot what fight was going on down in Puerto Rico at the time, but Crawford was actually in Puerto Rico to attend that fight, and for that weekend they were expecting an announcement of who Pacquiao's opponent was going to be. As we know from that point, he announced he's going to fight Bradley for the third time. We know what happened from that point. But just think about the disappointment that Crawford himself suffered, knowing just thinking that, hey, I'm going to fight Pacquiao. I'm going to get to fight a legend. And, of course, what goes along with that is a good purse on top of that. And, for that did not happen. And, like I said, from the lead-up to the Crawford-Postol fight, I said, well, this should be eliminated for Pacquiao. If I be Crawford, I'll be like, man, get the fuck out of here. You know what I'm saying? That's why I'm like, I ain't worried about fighting you. Crawford got that great win against Postol. He's basically, every fight going forward for Crawford is going to be a good fight as far as purse-wise. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't necessarily have to just sweat the fact that he didn't get the Pacquiao fight. Because even in that Pacquiao fight, of course, that probably would have been pay-per-view. So I'm guessing his purse would have been something like $4 or $5 million, and probably with some pay-per-view profits after that. So he still can make his money, despite
yeah. that.
And at this point now, with a Pacquiao Vargas fight, is Vargas a good fighter? And he is. And like I said before, Vargas is to me at this point a B-plus fighter. He's a B-plus fighter. Mm. So now what I'm looking at now, they're looking at Vargas. They're just simply picking an opponent that they think they can win. You know, that's one of the best chances to win it on. Because obviously so many questions from Pacquiao from the last Mayweather fight to the Bradley fight, things like that, and to his age and stuff like that. You know, they're just picking an opponent. That's all they're doing. They could have been they could have been Paul Crawford, and now with Roach having a front row seat to Crawford's skills, they definitely you're not going to see that fight. You're not going to see it.
Yeah.
Because they don't want Pacquiao to get embarrassed.
Right. Exactly. It was like I was saying there. It's kind of the instance where Roach is trying to protect the biggest fighter in the top ranked stable right now, and the one that they could get the most money out of at this point. And so they're seeing that they have a better shot of fighting Vargas and getting the win instead of fighting Crawford and getting the win. Even though, to me, Vargas was, kind of impressive against Saddam Ali back on March 5th at the D.C. Armory, fighting somebody like a Saddam Ali and then stepping up to fight Manny Pacquiao is a whole different animal, especially if it's coming off what would be an 8-month layoff for Jesse Vargas. This one here is kind of it would be a huge step up fight for him, and something that pretty much would put Vargas at the spotlight, much bigger spotlight than he was when he fought Timothy Bradley for the WBO welterweight championship that time. And he got pretty much, clearly outboxed for those first 11 rounds and then, was able to rock Timothy Bradley in the last round but couldn't finish it off to get the win. I'm looking for, Pacquiao Vargas fight in November, and then Crawford will probably move on to, fight somebody else there within the 140-pound division. All right, last thing here that I have is coming from ESPN's Dan Rayfield. As it looks like, Salido is trying to inch closer to a rematch with Vasyl Lomachenko. As we know, like I said, Orlando Salido was able to have a very tough fight against Francisco Vargas and score a decision win on, the fight that's potentially fight of the year, strong candidate for fight of the year. It was either, try to get a rematch there against Francisco Vargas or get a rematch with Lomachenko. Vargas right now is, not necessarily in a condition to get right back into the ring to fight Orlando Salido. So Salido's saying, hey, why not have a fight there against Vasyl Lomachenko? I mean, Lomachenko had a very impressive performance in his last fight there. So, and like I said, Lomachenko, she